Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Collective Clicks podcast. This is your host, Brandon Bateman. And today I'm going to be joined by Trevor Mock, who is the expert in online marketing in the real estate investment space. Trevor is the CEO of Carrot, a company that honestly, I think probably 90% of real estate investment websites are created with. And he has tons of insights about running a business, online marketing, where this market's going, and how you can make sure you end up on top. How are you doing today, Trevor?
Brandon, I'm doing great, man. Good to see you a few weeks ago, month ago in Tampa, dude. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to see you getting out of your Oregon shell. Mm-hmm. I don't think you traveled that you haven't traveled that much recently, right? Been working in the business a lot?
Yeah, not for work. I travel a lot personally. So family-wise, we travel quite a bit. We've gone on a number of vacations the past year all over the place. But business-wise, that's kind of part of when I started Carrot, that was part of my thing is that I said, I want to be able to build the business that doesn't require me to travel for business, but I travel when I want to for business. And so that's kind of the mix I have. I'll go out once or twice a year into a business event. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. And that's kind of how I thought about it. Cause we actually originally met probably 2 years ago, I had to guess, at an Investor Fuel event. And then not until a month ago in Tampa. I kind of think of you like you start going to enough of these events, you start to see the same people over and over again in this real estate investment space. You're like the event unicorn that just like pops out here and there just once in a while. If you can catch them, you got a line always of 50 people that want to talk to you because people know this is a rare sighting, right? You want to suck That's all the right. knowledge that you can.
It was funny on that topic. So we were in Arizona in January for our company retreat at Carrot. We flew 60 some odd people in there. And I knew Pace, so Pace Morby, I knew he was having his mastermind. And on the way to the airport, I text Pace. I'm like, Pace, I know you got your mastermind. Mind if I just stop by for a few minutes, say hi, and I got to hit the airport. So I come in there with my videographer, and we're packing our suitcases into his mastermind in there. And I go in there. I was just going to literally say hi to him, say hi to Jamil, say hi to Cody the Bounce. And then Pace, dude, he goes, now that you're in here, do you want to go up and speak? I go, sure, like what would be most valuable and when? He goes, well, you pick the topic, you've got half hour, and what about 10 minutes from now? Does that work? I go, okay, let's put something together. And so that kind of stuff, man, like I've had dozens and dozens of people who've hit me up from that event talking about the concept that I taught there was life-changing or whatever it is. But yeah, it's those random occurrences, man. I think it's destiny sometimes when you're able to get with certain people to go, either they need to hear a message that's going to help change their trajectory, or maybe there's a connection that's going to be amazingly beneficial for both. So guys, go to live events. I went to a lot of live events in the early days, for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a time and place for that value. And honestly, I see that our clients that do that progress faster than those that don't. I don't have any information here. I don't have any special data showing this, but it's kind of like my personal experience, kind of having seen it, is that there's a lot of benefit from that for sure. So you are a wealth of knowledge, Trevor, and I want to get into as much as we possibly can. So let's get into some of the meat of this. And I personally, I kind of view you like in my mind as an expert in a few different things. And this is probably just based on different presentations that I've seen of yours and things that I've seen that you're passionate about. The first one being basically entrepreneurship and growing a business. And I think that you have a really unique perspective into that, which actually, by the way, I see reflected really well. I was talking with someone on your team the other day and we went through Carrot's core values and I was like, yeah, that's Trevor, exactly what Trevor is. So maybe that's just the company as a whole and it kind of bleeds down from you as a person, right? Yeah. So that's the first aspect. And then also for those that don't know, Carrot is, I mean, you should probably introduce what Carrot is and that'll kind of lead to your second area of expertise.
Dude, yeah, for sure. So Carrot right now, if I were to kind of fast forward to today, Carrot helps our clients basically launch highly optimized websites and all the marketing tools behind those. The power many, if not most, of the biggest investors around the country. More online leads come through the Carrot platform than any other platform out there. I don't want to make certain claims I can't prove. I'm always like a proof guy. But in some of the data that we have, there's more top five rankings across the top 225 markets from Carrot sites than all other website systems combined. And the next two behind us are WordPress as a platform, like WordPress custom sites. And then you have a whole host of everything else. So our Carrot clients just dominate online with Google, and you work with a lot of our clients, right? That's something that is such a joy to be able to work with great people like you guys, because you guys leverage our platform with our clients, drive traffic using the skill set. We don't drive traffic. So that's where Bateman Collective and amazing companies like your guys comes in to go, now you guys work with the clients who aren't able or willing or don't want to do the work themselves and really amplify it. So we provide the platform, and amazing people like Brandon plug in and help people amplify it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, someone asked me the other day, what's the difference between you guys and Carrot? And I was like, well, I don't know, like everything pretty much, right? I think of Carrot like the technology behind everything, right? Let's just say you're cold calling. Carrot's the phone system.
Yeah.
Or the way to get the list or something like that. But and then we're the company that kind of builds all the pieces around that so that it functions, right? But there needs to be some base foundation there. You need a website if you're going to do online lead gen. And on that note, really cost-effective product. And it's something we've been recommending for a long time. So anyways, I think that's part of why you have so much market share. But that's actually a really impressive stat that you shared. Because I would guess if you did that in any other industry, it would be WordPress by 90%. And then everything else like 10%. So it's definitely backwards in the real estate investment
space. It is. And in that study, we run it quarterly. So that's one of the things that we do here internally because performance is such a big deal. And in this podcast, guys, this isn't a Carrot commercial. We're going to dive into data. We're going to look at what's happening in the market right now. Brandon and I are going to kind of riff on what the heck is going on with lead gen. What are the opportunities? But we looked at the primary couple keywords. So that's like your sell my house fast type of keyword and across the top 225 MSAs. So if you look at other keywords like cash buyer keywords, there's going to be a lot of other sites and Carrot does not dominate it. It just happens to be in the highly motivated house seller keywords across America, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, which is, I think there's a really understandable reason for why that would be the case, just considering who it is that tends to buy your product. So let's talk about that. If you don't mind, I'd love to dive into some of your marketing knowledge, specifically for online and for motivated sellers. So if we kind of chop that down, one place I'm really curious to start is your perspective on where things are going, right? I think a lot of people would say that the market has been, I don't know if challenging is the word, it's been really different from quarter to quarter over the last little bit, right? It's required a lot of adaptation and a lot of people are changing kind of where they're shifting their marketing channels. And what I've seen kind of anecdotally is it seems like in this space, the amount of investment as a percentage of the total marketing investment that's going into online channels seems to be growing really significantly. So I'm curious your take on that, why that's happening. And with all this increased competition online, the companies that really do exceptionally well, what is it that they're going to be doing differently?
Dude, it's such a good question. So the way that I tend to think, just like in general, is I think vision, strategy, tactics, right? So vision is, let's say, 3-5 years out or more. Strategy is what the heck's happening this next year to year and a half. And tactics are what are the things we're doing now to be able to execute that strategy. So I'm going to take people up to vision. We're going to go into strategy, then some tactics everyone can do right now in this market based on that. Because if I just give you guys tactics and you start going and applying tactics, you don't know why you're applying them, right? So looking vision-wise, so it's probably 5-6 years ago, Brandon, I was seeing in the market that the adjustments that were happening with retail and wholesale. Right, so I've told this story a million times. I think it's so relevant though, because so people can see where the industry is going according to where I feel it's going. So just like with any commodity market, there's a wholesale side of the market and a retail side of the market. You look, cars are maybe not deemed a commodity, maybe they are, but there's the retail side where you go down to the car lot and pay retail for the car. There's the wholesale side, which is when they say, hey, do you want to trade this in? And they offer you a discount on that car, or you can go to the auction and buy the discounted car. So there's a wholesale side. There's wholesale to groceries and retail to groceries. There's wholesale to real estate, retail to real estate. What tends to happen in markets is as soon as technology catches up with the markets to make it more efficient, you start to see wholesale and retail squeeze together. This is what happened in travel. This is what's happened in stocks and stockbroker, right? You started to see the retail, hey, I pick up the phone, I have to call a broker to place an order, and here's the price, it's 10 bucks an order for a stock. Then you start to go, well, the wholesale was way discounted price. That's where your E-Trade came in, Charles Schwab came in. They took the two and said, well, why can't we make it simpler and easier for someone to buy a stock and make it way cheaper, get it closer to wholesale, right? And so same thing happened on travel. So you had to used to go to get a hold of a travel agent and then book it and they'd take their cut of it. Well, when technology caught up with that and made it to where they could go out there and technology could scour the internet and create an advantage for the searcher and make it so they were in control, not the travel agency, they cut the travel agency out and got prices down for the searcher. And now they're mashing the two together, right? But it always makes opportunity still. So real estate, it took a little while longer because real estate's a more complicated transaction. It's not just buying a stock or taking a vacation. And so the last 3 to 5 years is when we've really seen technology start to really disrupt real estate and especially disrupt the retail side, right? And so the retail side has historically had a lock hold on the industry, right? So if you want to sell your house, you pretty much had to go over to a real estate agent. You didn't, like everyone knew 10 real estate agents. We saw the person on the bus stop sign. We have three buddies. We have an Aunt Betsy who's a real estate agent. Everyone knows 7, 8, 9 agents. But how many people in mainstream America 5 years ago could name one person that was a direct cash home buyer? Hardly anybody could. The wholesale side was oftentimes seen as what people called the underbelly. It was the hidden part of real estate. It was the part of real estate who's going to come in like underball you, right? And or lowball you and make a low offer. And so as technology caught up though, and websites made it easier for people to get in front of the right prospects on Google, and someone could go directly search for someone to buy their house directly instead of having to ask their friend for a realtor a reference, or you start to see Opendoor and OfferPad pop up and they come in the middle of the industry. They're not wholesale, they're not retail. They're trying to be in the middle. They're trying to grab both sides of it and yank it in towards the center and let the seller or the buyer control the process rather than the agent or the investor. They accelerated the drive towards the middle. And so I'm going to wrap the vision part. And it's probably 3 to 4 years ago, we were starting to tell people, hey, investors, you're going to start to see state by state, the real estate agent lobby get scared and they're going to start to go to Congress and all this stuff. And they're going to get laws over and over again, making it harder to wholesale properties. They're going to do it because they're going to be fearful that you're taking their business. We're seeing that happen all the time. I was looking in the data 6 months ago, and you would think that the pharmaceutical industry spends more money lobbying in Washington, D.C. than the real estate industry, right? No. The real estate industry and the realtor industry by far spent more money, and I think it was 2021, might have been 2022, lobbying in D.C. than the pharmaceutical industry did, which is insane. Because they see the industry changing. Okay, so a couple more things and we'll go into strategy. So if you're an agent and you see the threat of the investor and Opendoor and OfferPad taking that, and if you're an investor and you see the threat of Opendoor and OfferPad, and then also you see the opportunity in capturing more of the traditional retail market, you have to move towards the center. Agents should be investors, investors should be agents. We call it hybrid, right? That's not the future, that's the today now. So now let's bring it towards strategy the next year to two. If you're a hybrid provider, meaning I have a license or I'm partnering with someone who has a license, I'm marketing for motivated house sellers. Now I take those leads and I don't just take the lead and say, cool, if it fits within my pretty little box, I'll list the property for you because I'm an agent. But if it doesn't, I've got to go the other way because you're not serious. You're not a serious seller. Or if it doesn't fit my pretty little box as a wholesaler at 65, 70, 75, 85, whatever your percentage is of ARV, then you're not serious. And I'm going to go over here and that person just isn't realistic about their price. And you need to present them with the options to solve their problem, whether they want full price, take them retail. If they don't want full price and they're willing to get speed and convenience, take them wholesale. If they want full price but can't sell because they have no equity, which is going to happen a lot now, Brandon, this goes into like current times now, you're going to see people who bought their house 3, 4 years ago, great interest rates, maybe lost their job, prices went down. They have little to no equity. They need to sell now and they can't because they'd have to pay their real estate agent $40,000 on the house they overpaid for with a really good interest rate to be able to get rid of the property. Who's gonna solve that? Not agents. Investors are through creative finance, through subject to, through things like that. So let's go into the strategy part now. Is you have to step into hybrid in order to make the best ROI of all of your paid marketing. So when you're working with Brandon and Bateman Collective, and you are a pure wholesaler working against a hybrid, like one of my clients I just got off the call with named Troy in Minnesota. Troy's going to crush you all day long because he can take far more of those leads and turn them into revenue than you can as just a wholesaler. Or if you're an agent and you're just an agent, you're going to have a way hard time doing direct to seller, motivated seller marketing because your time to deal on a traditional listing is too long. You're not going to be willing to stick in the marketing for long enough. You're not going to be willing to spend it as much. And your biggest profit deals are the investment deals you're leaving and saying that they're not serious. So you have to be hybrid. Okay. So now let's get into like really right where the market is right now. We're in what I call a shoulder market. And this is crazy critical for the way that you guys do your marketing right now. I was on a call with our Epic plan members. It's our highest plan. And a guy named Marco Padilla in Florida. Carrot camper, amazing dude, multiple 7-figure business. He owns properties. He's 26 years old. He seven-figure a year wholesaling flip operation as well. And he has a great team and he only works like 20 hours a week now. And when he first started working with us, he was working like 80 hours a week. We got it down to 20, helped him optimize his team. And Marco came on the call last week and he said, Trevor, dude, the advice you gave me last month on our Epic call was awesome because I was getting ready to pull my Google pay-per-click marketing spend back because of the shoulder market. I'll explain it here in a second. I told him to not pull his spend back, to step into it harder because others are pulling their spend back. And I said, Marco, because of this market dynamic I'm going to explain here in a second, I think you're going to get more deals, but you might need to be more patient. As long as you're breaking even on it right now, keep it going because I think you're going to see a massive ROI in 3 to 6 months. It was way quicker for him in that market. He locked down 10 contracts just from Google pay-per-click in his market in Florida in the past 30 days after making a change to increase his ad spend when everyone else is decreasing it. So here's why. The shoulder market is this. We had high prices. People got used to high prices, low interest rates. And we're in between the phase where the market's still trying to adjust, where sellers are now okay with, and they've come to terms that they can't sell the property for what their neighbor sold theirs for 8 months ago. Okay. We're not there yet though. So you might be getting a lot of leads through Google pay-per-click or through SEO. Your lead to deal conversion ratio is lower, right? You're looking at it going, man, I used to get 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 or 1 in 15 or whatever your numbers are, leads turn into a deal. Now I'm getting 1 in 25. Does this mean I need to stop my marketing? Does this mean it's not working as well? Heck no. It just means your lead to deal conversion ratio is low. But in general, we're finding, and we did a survey, we're gonna be putting out some content with this, hopefully the next 2 weeks now, with you and a handful of others who are running a lot of traffic, cost per lead in general has gone down pretty markedly in many markets. Lead per deal ratio has gotten a little bit worse in many of the markets. So it doesn't mean demand is down. It means there's still people looking to search to sell. Actually, it's even potentially getting better. Your leads are lower cost now, right? But fewer of them are ready to sell now because they haven't come to terms with the new price that they can sell at. Or the pain point of the adjustment in the economy. Maybe they haven't lost their job or whatever else. The business they're working for hasn't been affected yet. There's a million different things that are likely going to happen as the economy gets worse. The pain for them isn't big enough for them to lower their price yet. But I think that's going to change in the next 3 to 6 months. So as the economy gets a little bit harder, as people get used to realizing they can't sell it for what their neighbor sold it for 8 months ago, you're going to see this curve flip to where people are going to be more motivated. And the people who are staying in front of those prospects are the ones who are going to win. The people who didn't dial back their paid marketing, the people who stepped into their marketing even more heavily this spring, even though your numbers maybe not be as good as they were 8 months ago, you're going to be rewarded big time, guys. Okay. So a couple tactics, and then I want to hear from you as well. So tactic number one, guys, is if you are seeing an adjustment in your return on investment with your Google pay-per-click right now, and let's say it's lower than you were normally getting 8 months ago, as long as you're breaking even, this is my philosophy right now, which you should be more than breaking even, but as long as you're breaking even, keep it going and do not shut it off. And make sure you have Facebook retargeting set up. You're retargeting them back good Facebook ads with 2 or 3 testimonials, eliminating their primary objections and what I call a direct ask ad. Brandon's got a way better process for this than I do. So just use whatever his service does for retargeting, guys, to build trust and credibility. Okay. So that's the first thing. Because if you know there's going to be a time period between when they're becoming a lead and when they're going to convert, you need to stay in front of them with credibility because you are going to be the one that they come to. Okay. Tactic number two is on your websites. One thing that people discount massively on websites is you likely will, like if you're doing Facebook ads, we've done a lot, seen a lot of data on this. I have a blog post coming out in May on this, but you're likely going to get a better visitor to lead conversion ratio on a Facebook ad to like a landing page, right? Something that's not a lot of content and stuff like that. In a study that we did since we purchased Investor Fuse, now we have lead to deal rate numbers all the way. We can look at what source the websites are coming from. Is it coming from a carrot site? Is it coming from this type of site, that type of site, this type of site? And we did a study on what is the lead to deal and profit per lead ratio, depending on if it came from this system or carrot or a landing page or a carrot mini site. Now we found that when it comes to a carrot mini site versus a landing page, you're going to have a little bit lower visitor to lead ratio on Facebook, especially maybe possibly on Google. That's mixed right now. But it's pretty stark on the lead to deal ratio and the profit per lead ratio, far higher on the carrot side. Now, why? It's not just because of carrot. It's because of psychology. It's because of human psychology. It's because if someone's looking to sell their house And this has been proven. If someone's looking to sell their house, and there's an amazing company I follow called Marketing Experiments, marketingexperiments.com. And I've been following them for ages. And they ran a study that I found probably 8 years ago. And they ran another one recently too, that asked the age old question, long copy versus short copy, right? Do we have a really short landing page with a lot of white space, or do we have long copy? The traditional person is going to say that looks cluttered, right? If I have a cousin who's a graphic designer and I send her one of those sites, she's going to pick the really short copy, white space, the aesthetically pleasing site 100% of the time. So you should go with that one. And 100% of the time, they're going to say, do not pick the long ones, too cluttered. No one's going to read it, right? That's the advice we
give. And the person who says that, the person who says that's going to have a strong opinion too, in my experience.
Exactly. They're going to have a very strong opinion on it because they're not the prospect. They're not the seller. They're not going through that foreclosure. They're not looking for that information. But Marketing Experiments reported, they said, in almost every scenario that they had tested across dozens of industries, short copy performed better on landing pages, on sales pages, except for two industries, real estate and medical. So why is it that long copy performs better in real estate and medical? Because they're the biggest decisions someone is probably going to make in their lives, right? It's what am I going to do with my financial future? And I have this health problem. I need to find a lot of information on it so I can feel good and confident. That's what people are looking for, y'all. They're not looking for five bullet points and to click a button and streamline it through. They're looking for trust. They're looking for a credibility. They're looking to work with the authority and someone who's an expert at this. And that's way more than you can actually get oftentimes on a quick landing page that with no testimonials oftentimes or whatever, right? And so that's tactic number two, guys, is I'm not saying landing page versus mini site. I'm saying focus on building massive credibility. If it happens to be on a landing page, amazing. Make the landing page long with great copy, with amazing credibility, testimonials, reviews, a section about you to show who the heck you are. Build that trust. That's going to increase your lead to deal ratio by way more than anyone can ever imagine. So those are the two quick tactics, man, but I'll shut up now and I'll toss it back your way and we can go whatever direction you want to go.
Yeah, that is awesome information, Trevor. I want to comment on the shoulder market thing a little bit. I think you might be interested to hear some of the most recent data we have on our side. And this is as of last week, but it sounds like this experience that Marco had in Florida, I don't know if it's isolated that it happened a little bit faster for him either. Last year, we averaged on PPC, it was close to 18 leads per contract across our clients, something like that. And we said 10 to 20 is the benchmark because we have clients that even through then were like 10 leads per contract all day long if they had really dialed in systems. This year so far, just reviewed our data, we're at 10.98 leads per contract on Google PPC specifically. So just shy of 11, which is a pretty major difference. Yep. And if you take our top 50% of clients, they are at about 7 leads per contract, right? So if you say not like top performers, but at least cut out the bad half, it's significantly better, which is really interesting because it got way worse towards Q3, Q4 last year. So I don't know if that's evidence of the market. Yep. We also released a new course to our clients on converting leads based on best practices. We've been dialing in lead quality in a lot of different ways. Maybe we're picking better clients. Maybe now our clients have more exit strategies because they've had to with the market shift. So then they can convert better. I mean, who knows, right? I can't tell you why this is, but I do think it's really interesting that what used to be like gold standard is now completely average across our clients in terms of lead conversion.
It is, dude. And it's kind of crazy. Like this is one of the benefits that people have by working with guys like you or in some of the groups that we have. In my Epic group, once again, it was not this last week's call, but a month ago, the original call that Marco was on, some others, we had the number one home buyer in Baltimore, Maryland on that call. We had Marco who crushes it. We had the number one home buyer in another market on that call. And then a smattering of just really sharp people all around. And the general feeling that we were having from Columbus, Ohio to Baltimore, Maryland to Florida was January, February was slow. They're like, guys, we're not sure what happened. And we had many of them were reporting a good Q4, but then they're like, dude, my Jan Feb was terrible. What was happening? I said, guys, look at the numbers. You're more than profitable on this. You need to double down. And here's why. It might be in 3 months, 6 months, might be next month. And all three of those who reported that, they saw a lead and deal tick up the next month. And so the lesson here is not that everyone's going to see that. The lesson is don't day trade your PPC. Don't day trade your marketing. You might have a month that's a challenge. Okay, awesome. What I want you guys to look at on your marketing, especially your paid marketing, and Brandon, you may have advice that is opposite of this, and I'd love to dive into it, but I'm like, Yes, you want to know your numbers on the monthly basis. You want to know your numbers on the weekly basis and sometimes on the daily basis, depending on how much money you're spending, right? But I'm not going to make any big decisions in my campaigns to like really curtail something back or really dive in or shut something off unless it's a quarterly basis. I'm going to look on a quarterly basis on how am I doing ROI-wise? How am I doing on this channel? Is it enough to where I can continue to invest into it the next quarter or two? And I'm not going to day trade and go, I had a bad month. I'm going to shut that channel off, guys. So, because you may have the best month ever the next month, right? So don't day trade those things. And I call it using math versus emotion. And so many people with their marketing, dude, we're using emotion all the time, right? It's, oh man, I put in $5,000 and I got 7 leads and I didn't get one deal from the 7 lead. And I'll talk with the person, we'll do the math and I'll say, okay, well, what's your average profit per deal? Average profit per deal is 25K. Okay, awesome. How much would you be willing to spend to get one of those deals? I like the 4-to-1 number, right? It's the 4-to-1 in the software world. It's called LTV to CAC, lifetime value to customer acquisition cost. In this world, you can call it ROAS, return on ad spend, or whatever you want to call it. But essentially is I'm spending in ad spend and people cost, ideally about a quarter of what the profit amount is. And I can scale that, especially if I have a team. Because if I have a team, that means I'm going to have to pay my salesperson. I have my office I got to pay for. And so it means my end net profit might be right there around the 50%, 30%, somewhere between there, right? So shoot for that 4-to-1. And so he says 25K and I go, cool, well, let's use this 4-to-1 number. And I'm just going to make up this, but it's about $6,200. Okay. And how many leads per deal? Let's look at your numbers. Well, on average, it's 10 leads going with your number there. And he's all frustrated because he put 5K and got 7 leads and got no deals out of it. He's like, should I dial it back? I'm like, dude, math is telling you right here that at minimum that you said you're willing to invest $6,250 to get a deal. And you said it's 10 leads. You haven't got there yet. Just let the math work for you, right? Get invest up to 6,500, invest up to 7K. You're probably going to get the leads. You're going to pop a $30,000 deal, which now is going to replenish your marketing for the next 2 months. So guys, get rid of emotion and step into the math.
Yeah, that is completely in line with what we teach our clients. Really interesting. I have not used the words day trading your PPC, but that's a perfect way to describe it because I think so many people think of it like that. Yep. One thing that we preach on our side is the difference between performance and results. Yep. Results would generally be what actually happened, right? Performance is like, what is the capability or the underlying trend, right? So let's just say I'm flipping a coin. I flip it twice and I get 2 heads. The result is that the coin gets me heads 100% of the time. The performance of the coin, however, is just the nature of the coin, right? Because of coins, the way that they are, you're going to get heads 50% of the time, tails 50% of the time. Yep. The difference between performance and results can be explained by sample size, generally. Mm-hmm. And the reason I share that is we have churn like any other company, right? We have clients that work with us and then they bail. And they have different reasons for doing that. Those that say because of return on investment. Over 75% of them, there is no statistical difference between their results and the results that they want.
Yep.
It's actually very rare that we have somebody that actually had enough data to say this wasn't working when they quit.
Yep.
Usually it's far too early because they're focusing on the results, not the underlying performance, right? Yep. And some people are just going to get luckier. And we have the same thing happen the other way, right? We have those clients that start up and get 3 deals in the first 2 days and they think this is the best thing that's ever happened to my business. I'm like, calm down. You're getting too excited about this. Yeah. You got to ride the waves, right? You got
2 months later and go, dude, I haven't got a deal in 14 days or whatever.
Yeah. The smaller the budget, the more pronounced this is. Another thing that came to mind too is a problem that my team came to me with. We have all this data from our clients of like lead to deal. What's everything that happens there, right? How many of them are spam? How many turn into net leads? And then from there, how many are contacted and how many of those contacted sellers become opportunities, et cetera. So what we do for our clients in the beginning, because we try to set really clear expectations. So we'll kind of, like you're talking about, almost a very similar experience to what you did with this person, where we say, what's our end return on investment goal? But what I like to figure out, because return on investment is a lagging metric, right?
Yep.
There's leading metrics that go to that, right? That's kind of basically what you're talking about, right? Like the number of leads that you need on a monthly basis might be a leading metric, right? It doesn't take you 6 months to realize that your number of leads is off. However, your ROI might be a lagging metric. It might take actually 6 months to get there. Right. So how can we feel confident as business owners investing all this money into marketing? We have to be able to understand for our lagging goals, what are the leading metrics that would contribute to us actually being on track for those goals? So we do that and we map it out. And you'd be surprised. Like our problem that we're having right now is people freaking out in that process. Because we take like their return on investment goal, right? We say, okay, you want this 4X return on investment or whatever the case is. And then we back it up and we say, okay, we need 6 leads per month to hit that, or whatever the case is. And they freak out. They're like, wait, 6 leads? You're telling me I'm only going to get 6 leads? I'm like, no, this isn't a forecast, right? There's no forecast involved here. We're literally just saying what you need to hit your goals. So actually the best thing that could possibly happen is that number is the lowest it could possibly be, right? Because then we have more confidence that we could even blow it out of the water. But people get nervous by that. And the average person, what they seem to actually need in leading metrics to hit their lagging metrics, it seems like it's overinflated in their mind, usually. Yep. When you look at what you actually need in order to get there with some patience, it's not as much as what most people think. And that's why they get scared, even though they're directly on track.
Dude, part of the reason behind that too, and this kind of goes back into that marketing psyche, is so many people, I want to answer one of your questions you asked before, is why is it that it seems like the online marketing side, PPC, SEO, is a growing channel right now in this industry? Well, I was on a call with one of our other customers in Florida, pro investor. He does 15 to 20 deals a month, moved over from a custom site to Carrot. He's getting crushing Google rankings and he hadn't done any PPC yet. And so as we're diving in a couple months ago and I'm wanting to understand his business, the vast majority of his revenue comes from offline marketing. And 2 years ago, it was a lot of text messaging and cold calling and direct mail, right? So what's been happening is they've been having to really cut back on and even drop their text messaging in many of the markets. I've heard that from a lot of people where it's like the liability for many of them is becoming so high because of lawsuits that are happening that they're dropping their text messaging. So I think you're seeing ad spend come out of certain channels that are either getting harder or too diluted, and they're coming into online. And it's something I've been talking about for years, Brandon, where I call it like there's an ebb and flow in marketing, right? Mainly on the direct response offline side of things. And here's what I mean by that. So I remember probably 6-7 years ago, the years might be a little bit off, but I remember 6-7 years ago, people going, oh my gosh, guys, everyone has to start doing cold calling. No one's doing cold calling, right? Maybe it was 10 years ago because everyone was doing direct mail at that time. It's like cold calling is the next thing. So what happens is direct mail response rates went way down. They went from amazing to you'd have to send double the amount of direct mail to get the deal. And everyone's sending the same darn postcards. You walk into a seller's house and there's 35 postcards and letters on the stack. We would hear that story all the time, right? So then some people are like, let's do cold calling. So they pick up cold calling. Okay, it takes 2 to 3 years for that outbound marketing channel to saturate our industry. So every coach is teaching it. Now every person's doing it in a market, right? So all of a sudden you had direct mail go up like this and direct mail start to have response rates go down. So some people stop doing it. They pick up cold calling. The next ebb and flow goes up. Okay, it starts to go up and it starts to then go down because it gets saturated. What happens? Well, people go, well, people aren't picking up phones, but they're answering text messages. Text messaging comes up, right? So then as cold calling starts to go down a little bit, text starts to come up. And then you look at this, it's a continual ebb and flow of outbound marketing based on how diluted that strategy is in a localized area. So if you have all the sellers or all the investors pulling the same list, calling people and doing the same things, you're going to naturally have a much lower response rate, meaning you have to invest more to get the same profits out of it. The one thing that we have not seen is we have not seen an ebb and flow yet, maybe never. We haven't seen an ebb and flow in the online side because it's demand focused. It's someone going to the internet and saying, I'm not coming here because you sent me a piece. Oftentimes, maybe they did and that got them online, right? All offline marketing drives online demand. But let's picture the person who didn't see a direct mail piece or didn't see a radio or TV app, and they just have a problem. And they're like, well, where do I go to solve the problem? You go to Google. And so Google is continually, and online is continually increasingly becoming that spot where people get their questions answered, right? And the rise of cell phones, I mean, we're at a spot now where our grandparents, my 80-year-old grandma is using her cell phone on Facebook and stuff, right? So she's Googling how to do these things. So we're going to continue seeing this rise, I think. So don't bank your whole business on ebb and flow marketing unless you're ready to adjust that strategy every 2 to 3 years and add on what I call the evergreen, but add on your online marketing, which is SEO and Google pay-per-click with some Facebook ads if they scale well in your market. Add on that as your consistent base. You get your scale from offline. You get your consistent base, I feel, from online. Okay, if you want to go into Dallas, Texas and close 30 deals a month, you're probably not going to be able to do that with just online marketing. So you're probably going to be able to get 5 to 10 deals a month, maybe 15 if you're crushing it in Dallas. but you're going to get the rest of it from offline, hammering the cold calling, knocking on doors, driving for dollars. That's where your scale comes from. Your best ROIs, your best deals, and your consistency comes from the online in a big way. Last thought pops up, dude, if we had time on the online side, because I've had this question a lot. People are asking me, and I'm doing a video on this here shortly. They're asking me like, well, Trevor, if online's so powerful and I see AI coming out and ChatGPT and people are saying, well, how is ChatGPT going to impact Google? And are they going to put Google out of business? I recorded a podcast 3 years ago. I need to go dig that one up, where I talked about what I felt the future of search was at that time. It was 3 years ago, way before ChatGPT came out. And I wasn't thinking about the technology per se, because I didn't know what technology was going to come out. I was thinking about like the user experience. I was saying, what's the ideal user experience, okay, of a searcher who goes online? Is the ideal experience that I type up sell my house fast, Dallas, and I'm served up with a never-ending page of results that I have to now go choose from to determine which one of those people that I don't know is the best one to solve my problem? Kind of similar to me going to Google and typing up best sushi place in whatever, in LA. There's going to be 100 of them. And now I've got to sift through all these reviews and this and that to determine what is actually the best sushi place in LA. And I'm going to determine it based on all these factors. How close is it to where I am right now? What are the reviews? Did a buddy of mine go there and did they recommend that place too? Right? So there's all these factors. So when you look at Google search, I go, okay, and at this time I said, I think where search is going to go eventually, I don't know how, is way before ChatGPT. As I said, I think search is going to give you one answer. I don't think it's going to give you 10 or 20 or 100. I think what the ideal solution is I have a challenge and I go to the internet and say, I need to sell my house quickly. I'm going through a foreclosure and I'm in Roseburg. And it serves me up an option that is what it feels the best option for me to solve that. And I think below that, it's probably then going to have, this isn't right for you. Click this and open up three more, right? I think three is an important number. It's not going to be one more. There's like psychology things and not going to be 10 more things. So open up three more. And here's how I think it's going to serve this up and how it's crazy relevant to everyone and what you guys can do right now in your business. This is what we're guiding our carrot clients on big time. Is Google's been looking at Google rankings in a big way by what they're calling the EAT score, expertise, authority, and trust, right? They're going to keep pressing into expertise, authority, and trust. If I was looking for the best sushi place in LA and ChatGPT had this most amazing search engine for helping me find the best sushi place in LA, what I would do if I were them is I would do this. I would figure out all the factors important to that person searching. I'd look in their social graph because they're logged into Google or logged into whatever. I'd look at who their friends are on whatever devices they're logged into. I'd look at any reviews they left. I'd look at their location, where they are. I'd look at any preferences that I could find that I could get access to. And I'd go, oh, cool. That person's friend, Bobby, ate at this sushi place 2 weeks ago and rated it a 5-star on Yelp. And this person, proximity-wise, is pretty close to this sushi place. There's two other ones closer, but they have lower reviews. So the reviews aren't as good. And none of their friends have ever checked in there, but they've all checked into this spot. I'm going to serve up that spot because proximity, their friend Bobby, and it's got good reviews. Okay. So if you look at the real estate side of things, guys, reviews are going to be even more important. Guys, I want you to step into reviews big time. We've been guiding our people on this for 4 or 5 years. We were the first ones in the market to press into reviews. I remember the very first Investor Fuel meeting I was ever at, dude. It was the very first Investor Fuel event ever. I spoke at it, and the topic I talked about was trust and credibility. The very first Investor Fuel event. And people in that room, the big ballers, they're like, for some reason, they'd never heard this stuff before. And I'm like, you guys got to work on getting your credibility score higher because everyone was just hiding behind their marketing pieces because you didn't have to stand out that way. Is if I got a marketing piece out that said I can buy your house quick for cash, that was enough. It's not enough now. Okay. So trust and credibility is huge. So get your reviews, get them up over 2025 on Google, get your BBB claimed. I hate BBB because they like extort you out of the money every year, but the older demographics love BBB, younger demographics love Google reviews and Yelp. Okay. If you're going after a 55 plus demographic, get your BBB profile because that's what they're looking at. What other things can you do? On the EAT score, we have found, Brandon, when we looked at big winners and big losers last year in the two big Google algo updates, we have an article coming out on this shortly with Carrot. We saw sites that had major swings and uplifts after the May and August update. We had sites that tanked. And you look at it and go, same. Well, there's like blog cannibalization issues, which we're working through. There's bad backlinks and all that kind of stuff, right? But when you take those out, what were the differences? We started to look at them, we're like, okay, in general, sites that had video on them, good quality video that was their videos, tended to have a little bit of an advantage. More of the sites that had a boost had video than sites that had a drop. Okay, that's interesting. Why is that? Is it just the video? I don't think so. So what else plays a role in that then? Well, a couple other things that play roles in that is when you're going on the sites that had good, robust about pages, that had customized their carrot about page, they had a picture of themselves, they said how long they'd been in business, they had their staff, they had other things in there. They tended to be the sites that got lifts more often than not. Now, it doesn't mean the ones who, that there was one that had an amazing about page that, yeah, a lot of them dropped because they had crappy backlinks or they had 300 automated blog posts that they didn't customize at all and they were cannibalizing. There were a couple other things, Brandon, that were popping up. They all had, the ones in general that had rankings boost tended to have better review profiles outside of it, and they tended to have more reviews on their websites. Another couple little things, they're like small little things we're starting to work on at Carrot as well, is on the expertise and authority side of it. The ones who tended to get rewarded in their content were the ones that looked like experts and authorities. Well, how do you do that? Your about page, your profile, little bio box on your darn website under each blog that says, hey, this is Brandon. He's been a real estate investor for 25 years. He's helped over 1,000 homeowners sell their homes quickly in the St. Louis market. And he has passion about blah, 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 blah. Google's looking at all that stuff right now. They're looking at what is the expertise, the authority, and the trust of the site. And they're rewarding you based on it. So I think that's going to bake into the future of Google. I think in 5 years, dude, you're going to do Google search. And as soon as Google can figure out the revenue model on it, that's going to be the key. They won't switch over to this until the revenue model matches. As soon as they can figure out the revenue model on it, I think you're going to hit a search and you're going to get one option that's based on all these factors. That's best option for you. And then it's going to give you three more below it. You're like going to click it to say, okay, that one's not it. Show me three more. And I could be wrong in this, dude, but I think that's where it's going.
Yeah, that's, we're going to have to hang on to this recording one of these days. We're going to release this in 3 years. And yeah. No, I mean that in a positive way though. I agree that like the burden of sifting through information is a real cost of using a search engine, and they'll do everything they can to kind of remove that. And that also helps them monetize better, arguably. Yeah, although,
and it's all trust, right? This is the thing I want people to remember. And it is, this is with ChatGPT, the reason it hasn't scaled out into those things yet is because of trust. You don't have 100% trust and confidence that the answer it's given you many times, except for like math things. You don't have 100% trust and confidence that it is the 100% accurate answer. Okay, with Google, the reason they display all of these options is because for years, Google's had the I'm feeling lucky button on there. Forever, they've had that on there. Who clicks that? No one clicks it because I have a low confidence in a level that it's actually going to give me what I'm looking for. No one clicks it. Dude, as soon as I'm feeling lucky turns into the only button on there, and I have a high confidence level that it's going to give me my actual answer that I'm looking for, I'm going to click that button all day long. I don't want to look at 10 results. It's all about confidence level on the result being the actual thing that is going to give me my answer. And they're going to figure it out. And as soon as that happens, that's going to change the game. So you guys are probably going, well, how does that affect SEO? How does that affect other things? I think it's going to be a lot less, hey, there's 10 spots in SEO on page one. I think it's going to be a lot more hyper-localizing our solutions and making sure that I might rank number one for Bobby over here, but I might not show up at all for Priscilla over here, right? And so we have to really be building those hyper-local engines locally. We have to be building those credibility, building the trust, doubling down on reviews. And just, we're going to see a lot of consolidation in this market to the next 5 years. You're going to see people going out of business. You're going to see people buying other wholesaling and flipping businesses. So I think in general, you'll see less options too.
That is crazy interesting, Trevor. I have one more question for you. It's a hard one, but I'm hoping help. Because I'm curious to hear your perspective on this. Because when I put myself in people's shoes, I have a hard time. And this is specifically, like, I think you, more so than most people, are in a good position to speak to digital marketing as a whole, and especially as a service in this industry. And there's a lot of options. So that considered, if you are an investor and you're trying to decide, if I'm looking for a partner to help me scale my online marketing, who do I work with? What are some of the factors that you would look at, and how would you make that decision about the best partner for you?
It's a good question, dude. I mean, it's something we have those conversations with customers dozens of times a week. And I think the biggest thing with any type of partner, whether it's an actual business partner or a partner who's a consultant who's going to help us with something, or a spouse partner, it kind of goes to what we started this call with. You'd mentioned values, and you were talking with one of my team members and core values. There's got to be a values match, first of all. If you're going to work with that person, I don't care how great their stats are, if there isn't a values match, that you guys believe in similar things. I'm not talking faith-wise, that could be a part of the values match, right? But I'm talking like, when you talk with that person, you generally feel that you guys and gals are on the same wavelength, you are rooting for similar things, and that you generally feel that person cares about you. If you don't have that, I don't care how good the stats are across the board. It's not going to work out. So values match number one, because there's some people, dude, in this industry who have amazing stats. I'm like, I would never send anyone there because I don't know what they're getting into values wise. I don't know what that person's going to take them onto some mental journey that I don't think is healthy for that person. But dude, their stats are good. I'll never send anyone there ever. So values number one. Number two is I want to see transparency. This is me personally, but I want to see transparency from the partners I work with. Of, it's not that I need to know like everything that they're doing. I want to have an idea. I'm like, hey, what's the strategy we're going after? I don't want to put my money into a black box and go, man, I have no clue what they're doing with this, but I hope that it works. And this is probably me as a marketer. Maybe a lot of other people could give a crap about this, but me as a marketer, I want to understand it. That's one of the first things, guys. Like, I heard this years ago that you never want to outsource your marketing in your business. And I'm not talking outsourcing tasks. You should outsource tasks. You should outsource the work that Brandon and his team does. You should not outsource your overall marketing strategy in your business. And too many investors try to do that. They go, dude, I just like doing sales and I like talking to sellers and I'm going to go find someone who can do my marketing and they'll take care of that. Never outsource your marketing. That's the lifeblood of your business. You outsource the tasks of your marketing. So if you've determined that you want to go get a great PPC person, amazing, learn about it a little bit, but then go find the right person, go work with Bateman to go, okay, dude, they can take this part of it and crush it. I trust that they're going to do all the tactics. I don't have to learn the tactics. But strategy-wise, I'm leading strategy, not strategy in PPC, strategy overall across my marketing as an org. So make sure that I think your vendor is set up to be an expert in that area and that you're not having you don't have the expectation of them to come in and be your marketing strategy for your whole company. Okay, because oftentimes that gets placed on the PPC or the SEO consultant to step in and say, oh no, we're really here just to do this. We can give you advice and everything else, but you, Mr. and Mrs. Owner, you still need to be the head of that, or you need to have someone at your company who's leading that. Otherwise, you guys are going in the wrong direction. I think the third thing on the partner side of it, man, another part in the transparency, I want to have someone who sends me updates on a consistent basis. I personally, for anyone who's running my traffic, I want to be able to look at it weekly. Like, I want a weekly report. I don't know what your guys' cadence is. A lot of investors don't want weekly. They want monthly, right? But I want a vendor who's willing to make the adjustments I need to be able to give me the data that I need to be able to make the right decisions quickly enough on my end. There's some vendors we worked with who are so strict where it's like, dude, we're only sending a monthly out. We're never going to talk to you. And if you want more data than monthly, whatever. Like, okay, I'm sorry, you're great, but I'm not going to work with you because you're not willing to adjust this to give me what I need to make decisions quicker. But without going into that further, I think the last thing, dude, is I want someone who is at the forefront of things and testing things. If there's like someone running my PPC and they've never ran a split test, run the other way. If they're not deep into data, and I know Brandon and his whole company is, run the other way. Just go with someone who's testing all the time, who is deep on the data side. They remove emotion, they go with math, and they bring you that advantage that you couldn't get by yourself.
Yeah, great advice. And I think also the advice, when coupled with some things that you said before, shows a little bit more meaning. Like, for example, let's just say we're talking about weekly versus monthly reports. Like, yep. A lot of our clients that want weekly, they also want to make massive decisions weekly, right?
Gotcha.
But you got to layer that with the favorite thing I've heard said around this, and I wish I could give credit to where it's due. I can't remember where it's due, but somebody had this mindset of macro level patience, micro level impatience. And the concept being, right, you want to always be on top of those metrics, always trying to make them better, always reacting to them, but you have to be patient for the outcome that you're looking for. Because we have clients that fall into either camp, right? The ones that tend to like want to be all on it weekly, they give it like 3 bad weeks in a row and then they're out, right?
Yeah.
And then those who are willing to make those big decisions, they're like, yeah, I will give it a 6-month time period and I'm going to make a decision about if I continue PPC after that. Throughout that whole 6-month period, they're not on top of their sales team. They're not watching how their capacity is changing. They're not checking their time to get to new leads and things like that. Right. So you kind of need like that long-term mindset when it comes to actually being patient for the outcome, but you've got to be in the weeds and impatient on a daily basis with all the many things that need to happen along the way.
Dude, 100%. And I fully agree with you there. And one thing I want the listeners to make sure that to be clear on this is, yeah, I don't suggest most people should go get weekly reports. That's for me as a, I guess you could call it an expert level marketer. And the main reason there for me for that is, yeah, I'm not making any big adjustments on a weekly. Like I said, I don't day trade any of my marketing channels. We have monthly targets. We want to build towards those targets. We have quarterly goals. We want to build towards those goals. On the weekly basis, it's more about momentum. It's like, all right, cool. I want to make sure that we have a cadence going where there's momentum going. We can celebrate the wins. I can know where things are off, where they're on. And I can know that if we're, as an example, if we're halfway through the month and we're trying to get 20 leads this month to hit our goal quota, and let's say we've got 5 leads and we're already halfway through the month, then I can work with the team to go, okay, cool. Is there anything that you guys have an idea on that can get this ramped up, or anything that you guys have a question for me on, or is there anything I can do on my end to be able to go adjust the website or do whatever to help the effort with it? And I'm never going to, if we're 5 leads and we're trying to get 20 for the month, we're halfway through. Worst thing in the world you can do is stop that marketing and make a big decision. It should be small iterations, momentum building things, and let your vendor, your expert really run that. And guys, if you're not an expert in marketing, you probably should not be getting weekly then. You should be getting monthly or whatever that cadence is. But if you're not an expert in marketing, weekly is going to be the biggest distraction in the world for you. So hopefully people didn't take that advice and run with it and go, Brandon, give me weekly updates, but I know nothing about marketing. Oh, that'd be terrible.
Well, I don't think I'm not saying that's a bad idea. What I'm saying is coupled with the mindset that you have otherwise, it's amazing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, if you're like really impatient and you, like we've had clients, we've actually had to cut off from reports because mm-hmm. they were too emotional about it. And we just had to have a conversation one day. Honestly, it's not good for you to see these numbers this often. Yep. I think you'd be happier as a human and your results would be better if we could just like tone it down a little bit. And you need to have some moderation in how often you analyze your data.
100%.
And usually that conversation goes like the other person saying, well, yeah, I am kind of stressed out and I probably could be a little happier. And, you know, this is really tough on me and it's a better situation for everybody, right? It's about what makes it work for your business and what you can delegate and what you can't.
Yep.
Right. There needs to be ownership in it. This is awesome information, Trevor. If anybody's interested in learning more about Carrot or if they want to contact you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, dude. Carrot.com is our site. We have the Carrot Cast. It's kind of my labor of love. It's carrotcast.com or look it up on Spotify. I talk a lot about the business building side of things, mindset side of things over there. And yeah, we've got a blog with lots of great information. We're going to have some great information on the PPC side that we're working with Brandon on and some other amazing things. So guys, you guys are in great hands, number one, with Brandon and his whole team and his organization. So step into it. They're one of the best in the business. And one of the things I was most impressed about first time I met you, man, was the conversation we had in Dallas around data. And we talked about your guys' focus on data and the deep things you're doing on data. I haven't heard that a whole lot in this industry outside of you, me, and maybe another person or two. So you guys are definitely working with someone who knows what they're doing and they're at the forefront of things with it. They're not just following what someone else is doing. So love it, man. Appreciate the invite on.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well, Trevor. Definitely invite everybody to go check out that Carrot Cast. Go sign up for Carrot, get a new website, one that performs better. And definitely, if you can ever hunt down another podcast episode with Trevor in it, definitely listen to that. I'm sure it's after this one, you believe me. But anyways, thank you for taking your time to be on the show, Trevor.
Dude, appreciate it, man. Thank you, guys. Have an amazing rest of the week, y'all.